The Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did to Sarah as he had promised. And Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age at the time of which God had spoken to him. Abraham called the name of his son who was born to him from Sarah, bore him Isaac. And Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded him. Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. And Sarah said, God has made laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh over me. And she said, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age. And the child grew and was weaned. And Abraham made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned. But Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, laughing. So she said to Abraham, cast out this slave woman with her son, for the son of this slave woman shall not be heir with my son, Isaac. And the thing was very displeasing to Abraham on account of his son. But God said to Abraham, be not displeased because of the boy and because of your slave woman. Whatever Sarah says to you, do as she tells you, for through Isaac shall your offspring be named. And I will make a nation of the son of the slave woman also, because he is your offspring. So Abraham rose early in the morning and took bread and a skin of water and gave it to Hagar, putting it on her shoulder along with the child, and sent her away. And she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. When the water in the skin was gone, she put the child under one of the bushes. Then she went and sat down opposite him a good way off, about the distance of a bow shot, for she said, let me not look on the death of the child. And as she sat opposite him, she lifted up her voice and wept. And God heard the voice of the boy, and the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, what troubles you, Hagar? Fear not, for God has heard the voice of the boy where he is. Up! Lift up the boy and hold him fast with your hand, for I will make him into a great nation. Then God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. And she went and filled the skin with water and gave the boy a drink. And God was with the boy, and he grew up. He lived in the wilderness and became an expert with the bow. He lived in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother took a wife from him from the land of Egypt. At that time, Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, said to Abraham, God is with you in all that you do. Now, therefore, swear to me here by God that you will not deal falsely with me or with my descendants or with my posterity, but as I have dealt kindly with you, so you will deal with me and with the land where you have sojourned. And Abraham said, I will swear. When Abraham reproved Abimelech about a well of water that Abimelech's servants had seized, Abimelech said, I do not know who has done this thing. You did not tell me, and I have not heard of it until today. So Abraham took sheep and oxen and gave them to Abimelech, and the two men made a covenant. Abraham set 7 ewe lambs of the flock apart, and Abimelech said to Abraham, what is the meaning of these 7 ewe lambs that you have set apart? He said, these 7 ewe lambs will take from my hand that is may be a witness for me that I dug this well. Therefore, that place was called Beersheba, because they are both of them sworn oath. So they made a covenant at Beersheba. Then Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, rose up and returned to the land of the Philistines. Abraham planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba, and called there on the name of the Lord, the everlasting God. And Abraham sojourned many days in the land of the Philistines.
Life for an orphan in the mid-1800s in London was not easy. The only option for them seemed to be to go to the workhouses where there were long hours and bad working conditions. And it was at this time and this need that charities and orphanages started to be established. And the ones ran by George Mueller stood out. George Mueller was a spiritual man. He was a faithful man. And he believed, he didn't ask for any donations, but he would pray and ask that God would provide. One day, one of the house mothers came to him and said, "George, the children are all dressed and ready for school, but there's no food for breakfast." Well, George had them sit down at the long tables, and he prayed, and he thanked God in advance for the food that God would provide. Well, almost immediately, there was a knock at the door, and it was the local baker. He said, "God woke me up at 2 a.m., and he told me that you would need bread this morning." And then, moments later, the local milkman had broken down right outside the orphanage, and he said the milk would soon spoil, and would the children like to have it? Well, wouldn't it be more convenient if God had done all this the evening before? Right? But instead, Mueller knew that God's promises may not arrive early, but they always arrive on time. Mueller believed what he could not see, but God confirmed his faith in real time. We spent the last 9 weeks following the life of Abraham as God has called him out of Ur to a land that he would show him. This journey has had opportunities for great faith and giant missteps. Through it all, God has asked Abraham to put his trust in him and his promises. Last week, we saw Abraham make the biggest blunder yet. God had promised that he and Sarah would have a baby within the next year. Yet he feared the people of the land and lied to the king. He risked Sarah being compromised or even death by retribution from a king. This week we have before us three scenes in which God promises to Abraham made so many years ago are being fulfilled in God's time. We also see how God's faithful people respond when their faith has been made sight. And these stories serve as our three points. First, we rejoice when God fulfills his promise made 25 years ago. Trusting God means expecting that God will fulfill his promises in his time. Then, after Isaac's birth, the scene shifts, and we see Abraham choosing the son of the promise over the son of the flesh. All along the way, God is faithful to Hagar and to Abraham to fulfill his promise to them, and we see that trusting God means choosing God's promises over our own means of fulfilling them. And lastly, the same Abimelech from last week comes on the scene, and he and Abraham make a covenant over a well. And we watch as God's faithful friend is a blessing to the nations. Trusting God means being a blessing to those around us. Together, these three pictures show us that when faith is turned to sight, God's faithful people trust that he will fulfill his promises in his time. When faith is turned to sight, God's faithful people trust him to fulfill all his promises. Turn with me in your Bibles once again to Genesis 21, and we'll begin reading at verse 1. The Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did to Sarah as he had promised. And Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age, at the time of which God had spoken to him. You can almost hear Ode to Joy playing in the background, right? These short sentences are short. They don't say a lot, but they come with a whole lot of meaning. In Ode to Joy, you can hear the timpanis rumbling. You can hear the strings in their full swell, and you hear the choir as they are at full strength. This is a celebration. It's been 25 years since God had told 75-year-old Abraham that he would have a son. He was to go to an unknown place where he would be made into a great nation, and somehow he would be a blessing to the nations. Now today, the waiting, the hoping, the doubts and fears were finally answered. Today, a son was born to 100-year-old Abraham and his 90-year-old wife. His faith in God had become the sight of his son in his wife's arms. But did you catch the emphasis in this passage? Look with me again at these verses. It says, the Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did to Sarah as he had promised. And Sarah conceived and bore a son in his old age at the time of which God had said. This story is about God speaking his word to his people and him making it true in his own time. This also turns the usual religious story on its head. We just saw Abraham and Sarah act faithlessly in a way that put the fulfillment of the promise in jeopardy. Without God's intervention, they might have been killed by that pagan king, or worse yet, if what normally happened in a harem, a king's harem, had happened to Sarah, the paternity of Isaac would have been in question. However, God turned blunder into blessing and fulfilled his promise to them despite their stumblings. What other God does this for his people? When with their faith made sight, now how do Abraham and Sarah respond? Look with me at verse 3. Abraham called the name of his son who was born to him, whom Sarah bore him, Isaac. And Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old, as God commanded him. This is another crescendo. Like Ode to Joy, this repeated phrase is a crescendo of God's promises to Abraham as he migrated from Ur of the Chaldees to this place. The word his son. It's a reminder of the promise that he made in Ur so long ago and who was born to him. This was going to be his child. It wasn't going to be a fulfillment of the promise through the adoption of a servant or a nephew. And whom Sarah bore him. This wasn't going to be fulfilled through their own attempts to make it happen. Isaac, his name means laughter. It's a reminder how absurd they thought it was when God told them that a 90-year-old wife would have a baby. You can bet he names the baby as God told him. Then he gives him the physical sign of the covenant, circumcision. Isaac was going to bear on his body the sign of the promise that God would make Abraham a great nation through him. When Abraham sees God fulfill his promise, he responds by obeying what God told him to do. As Carl pointed out a few weeks ago, God's covenant promises do not depend on our ability to earn them, but they do demand our obedience when they come. You can bet that Abraham did not view obedience as drudgery. This was joyful. Now look with me at verse 5. Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. And Sarah said, God has made laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh over me. And she said, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age. This story is absurd to anybody who does not know our God. He was an old man by any standard. And the last time we saw Sarah laughing, she was denying it because she didn't want to admit that what she heard Yahweh say was crazy. This time, it's the laughter of joy and faith at wonder at this God who's able to accomplish his purposes in this way. No one would have scripted this. But the question she asks at the end has a touch of irony to it. She asks, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age. Yet it was God who told her a year before that this would happen. He made this promise happen. This scene has shown us that God fulfills his promises in his time, and he will ensure they come about. When they do, they bring joy and awe and God. To God's faithful people as they respond in obedience to what he's told them to do. Can you imagine the children of Israel as they're about to go into the promised land, as they hear this about the promises God told their forefather and how he fulfilled it, how they would have received it? They were participating in the fulfillment of the promise made to their father so long ago. He was making it true and come to pass in his own time, in his own way, and it left no doubt that God was responsible for making it happen. He also made a promise to another of Abraham's offspring. God told King David that one of his sons would sit on his throne forever. It would be about 1,000 years before this would come to pass, but Jesus Christ, son of David, son of Abraham, is the fulfillment of God's promise of an offspring that would be a blessing to the nations. If you've placed your faith in Jesus Christ, Abraham's ultimate son, you have been made a citizen of the nation that was promised so many thousands of years ago. While we, like Abraham, sojourn in a land that's not our own, we need to remember how God has already fulfilled his promises to us. We need to joyfully obey him as we wait for him to bring about their ultimate fulfillment. Sometimes, however, walking in faith means doing hard things because our sin has made life complicated. Look with me at verse 8. And the child grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned. But Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, laughing. So she said to Abraham, "Cast out this slave woman with her son, for the son of this slave woman shall not be the heir with my son Isaac." And the thing was very displeasing to Abraham on account of his son. But God said to Abraham, "Be not displeased because of the boy and because of your slave woman. Whatever Sarah says to you, do as she tells you. For through Isaac shall your offspring be named. And I will make a nation of the son of the slave woman also, because he is your offspring." So Abraham rose early in the morning and took bread and a skin of water and gave it to Hagar, putting it on her shoulder along with the child, and sent her away. And she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. On the surface, this story is tough to read. It looks like Sarah is being cruel and jealous, and the supposedly loving God is backing her side of the story. However, as we dig deeper, we shall see that God's people are acting on his promises and that he is faithful and loving despite the mess we've made. This scene opens joyfully. It was only until modern medicine that about 50% of all babies born didn't make it to their teenage years. Every milestone was precious. Isaac is probably 2 or 3 years old at this point, and Abraham and Sarah are celebrating God's faithful care over their promised son. But then things turn dark. His half-brother is laughing, but this is not a laughter of joy and celebration. It is one of mocking and derision. In fact, the attitude that Hagar had to Sarah back in chapter 16 seems to have been passed down to her son. It is a sign that those who are opposed to God mock his followers, his people. Well, Sarah has a mama bear moment at this point and says that Hagar and the boy need to leave. In fact, she used the word throw out, and it doesn't mean just remove from the tent. It means divorce. This is the same word that is used when God throws Adam and Eve out of the Garden of Eden. It's serious. She's asking Abraham to cut off all communication, all ties, all connection with Hagar, and to remove his protection from this boy. So how are we to understand Sarah's attitude at this point? Abraham clearly doesn't agree with it. In fact, he wanted God to fulfill the promise he made back then through Ishmael. He didn't expect God to fulfill it through Isaac. He doesn't agree. But God steps in and confirms that what Sarah has done is the right thing. She seems to rightly understand that Ishmael's presence in the home is going to be a problem for the son of the promise. Human history is filled with stories, going back all the way to the very first brothers, that sibling rivalry, especially that over inheritance, can lead to murder. So then, how does Abraham respond to God when God tells him to listen to Sarah? The sign of faithful followers of God is that they respond right away. Abraham gets up, packs up bread and water, and sends them on their way. Now, why would he do this when he was so bothered before? Well, did you notice what God said after he said, "Listen to your wife"? He said, He reminded Abraham of the promise that he made to take care of Ishmael, and that Ishmael would become a nation. God would be the one to take care of Ishmael and make him a great nation, so Ishmael would be blessed because he was Abraham's son anyway. This is why Abraham could let him go. He trusted God to keep his word, even though he would not be in Ishmael's life anymore. I wonder, are there any areas in your life where you have tried in your flesh to accomplish God's promises for you? Sometimes we are called to take drastic actions to remove those from our life in order to act in a way that puts our faith fully in his promises. Let's continue reading in verse 15. When the water in the skin was gone, she put the child under one of the bushes. Then she went away and sat down opposite him a good way off, about the distance of a bow shot. For she said, "Let me not look on the death of the child." And as she sat opposite, she lifted up her voice and wept. And God heard the voice of the boy, and the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, "What troubles you, Hagar? Fear not, for God has heard the voice of the boy where he is. Lift up the boy and hold him fast with your hand, for I will make him into a great nation." Then God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. And she went and filled the skin with water and gave the boy a drink. And God was with the boy, and he grew up, and he lived in the wilderness and became an expert with the bow. He lived in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother took a wife for him from the land of Egypt. There seems to be a contrast set up between Sarah and Hagar. Where Sarah seems to be acting on God's promises, Hagar seems to have completely forgotten them. Remember what happened when we first met her? Sarah had driven her out the first time, and she was in the wilderness by a spring of water. The angel of the Lord found her and made a promise that her offspring would be uncountable. This was an echo of the same promise that he had just made to Abraham. And she had even given God the name, the God who sees, and had named a well after him. Now, when they've run out of water and are on the verge of death, she seems to have completely forgotten about the promise that God made her. In her grief and not wanting to see her son die of dehydration, she casts him under a tree and goes a bowshot away. Teenage Ishmael was in a very bad way. And this word cast, it means to cast into the grave. She was leaving him to die. But do you find it interesting that the angel says that he's responding to the cry of the boy and not to her voice? She's clearly crying, but she's forgotten that God, she even named him this. God is the one who hears, and she's forgotten that he does hear. Isn't that just like us? How many times in our despair do we forget that God has promised to hear us in our time of desperation? Well, what does the angel tell her? Does he rebuke her for this? No, he tells her not to fear. And then he reminds her of the promises made so many years ago. The key to her distress was remembering the promises that God had made to her. After that, the angel opens her eyes to see a well of water nearby. Now, I don't know how far it was away, but it was clearly within walking distance. She was so caught up in her misery that she lost hope that salvation might be close. But God in his mercy showed her the way. Again, how often do we see this? That salvation might be close at hand, but we need to look at God because he is the one that's going to provide for us. They both survive the ordeal, and Ishmael grows up and makes a home in the wilderness. And even though he's experienced the blessings of God as he grew, it seems like Hagar's missed the point again. Instead of seeking a wife from among the promised family, the one that is inheriting the promises of God, maybe by getting a wife from one of the clan members, she looks for a wife in Egypt. It's rarely faithful and a sign of faith to return back to Egypt where we've come from. We look for our promises to be fulfilled in the promised family. This last scene has been one of contrast because Abraham and Sarah saw God fulfill his promises to them, they were willing to trust him to keep his promises to them. Even though it was really tough for Abraham, he entrusted Ishmael to God's care. Through this experience, Ishmael, the father of many nations, experienced the blessings of God on account of his father. However, Hagar seems to be an example of faithlessness in God and his promises. She had forgotten what he said and did not expect him to come through for her. Despite this, God provided for her son and her anyway. God is faithful to his promises, and even those outside the covenant family experience his blessing. You know, this might actually give some hope for some of our families who have experienced this, where they've had children who walked away from the faith. And we know that we have no input into their life, but we see that God sees them. We see that God hears them in their time, and we trust that he will fulfill his promise to them so we can trust, put our trust in him, and that he will watch over them. Finally, this last scene shows God's faithful people blessing the nations even when they've been wronged, because their faith has become sight. It may seem like a disjointed story from the last one, but we need to see them, these two stories working together to show how God's faithful people act when they've seen God's promises fulfilled. Read with me starting in verse 22. At that time, Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, said to Abraham, "God is with you in all that you do. Now therefore swear to me here by God that you will not deal falsely with me or with my descendants or with my posterity, but as I have dealt kindly with you, so you will deal with me and with the land where you have sojourned." And Abraham said, "I will swear." Imagine with me that you are a nomadic herdsman and you're wandering in the wilderness that's not your home territory. You're not only taking care of your wife and child, but you're also taking care of all the herdsmen and all their families and all the flocks and needing to provide for them. In the wilderness, there's not a lot of sources of water, so any source is precious. Now the neighboring king, to whom the last time you saw him you'd been caught lying to, now shows up with the commander of his forces. It doesn't seem like this is a social visit. You'd be a bit on edge as they arrived. But instead of a serious confrontation, King Abimelech gets right to the point and asks Abraham to make an oath to be honest with him. He actually has a right to do so, because the last time we saw that Abraham did not have a real good grasp of the truth. He also knows that Abraham has God on his side, and God will fulfill all that he says he'll do. Because Abraham knows that God will keep his word, and he has no problem answering and swearing an oath to be honest, it's because he does not feel the need to hide and to protect himself by being deceitful. God will protect him. But then there's an ironic twist. Read with me starting with verse 25. When Abraham reproved Abimelech about a well of water that Abimelech's servants had seized, Abimelech said, "I do not know who has done this thing. You did not tell me, and I have not heard until today." So Abraham took sheep and oxen and gave them to Abimelech, and the two men made a covenant. Abraham sent 7 ewe lambs of the flock apart. And Abimelech said to Abraham, "What is the meaning of these 7 ewe lambs that you have set apart?" He said, "These 7 ewe lambs you will take from my hand, that this may be a witness for me that I dug this well." Therefore, that place was called Beersheba, because both of them swore an oath. And they made a covenant at Beersheba. Then Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, rose up and returned to the land of the Philistines. Abimelech planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba and called on there the name of the Lord, the everlasting God. And Abraham sojourned many days in the land of the Philistines. Abimelech's servants had seized this well that they had dug and was so critical to their clan's survival. He had to confront the king at this point. This well didn't belong to the king because it was outside his territory. Remember, they had to come to the out of the land of the Philistines, and they would return. But you know, if your relationship is based on an oath of honesty, you would think that he would own up to the fact that his men had done this thing. Instead, he acts like any football coach that we've seen in the last several years, where their program gets in trouble, and they blame the boosters, they blame their assistant coaches, anybody but themselves. This is the same pattern that began with our father Adam so many years ago, and it continues to this day. But how does Abraham respond when he's wronged like this? Because he saw God provide for him, he was willing to be generous and build a relationship rather than make an enemy. Mirroring what Abimelech did the first time they met, Abraham, now the innocent party, gives the king oxen and sheep. But then he makes a covenant with him. This is more than just a treaty. It's a relationship that has serious consequences if it's broken. This relationship is for the long term. Then Abraham does something that gets the king's attention. He separates out 7 ewe lambs and gives them to the king. This generous gift represents Abraham's future. These 7 ewe lambs will be the future mothers of future sheep for his flock that will grow. Abraham trusts so completely with his future that he is willing to be generous to the neighbor who wanted to take his well. This seems upside down to us. Grace instead of retribution. I feel like we've read that somewhere before. Then he calls the name of the well Beersheba, or it's the well of the oath or the well of 7, because Sheba has both meanings. But anyone would have heard the name Beersheba would have remembered that this covenant between Abimelech and Abraham was ratified with these 7 sheep. Then when Abimelech and his general left to go back to their own land, Abraham planted a tree. This tree would have been something rare in this area because there was not a lot of water. But this tree was something else. It was something more. The promise that God made to him so many years before, that his children would have a land to call their own, would have a stake set in the ground at this tree, at this well. Years later, when Israelites were talking about the land that God had given them, they would refer to the breadth of it by talking about Dan, the city in the north, and Beersheba in the south. Any time that they would have heard this name, they would have remembered God's faithfulness to their forefather. Now, these 3 snapshots have shown us God's faithfulness in fulfilling his promises in his own time. They show his people living life when their faith has been made sight. Abraham was a sojourner because God called him to be one. But he promised that he would have children of his own and that they would number more than the stars in the sky. They would have a land to call their own, and through him, all the families of the earth would be blessed. Can you relate to feeling like this land is not your own? You don't have a home yet, but God's promises are far off and untouchable. The promise of a descendant was fulfilled after 25 years after God had first made it. Because God was the one responsible for making it and keeping it, despite all of Adam's efforts to break it, to mess it up, and to keep it from happening, God was the one who did it. Once his faith had been made sight, he and Sarah acted differently. There was no question that God would keep his word in his own time. They could obey what God commanded without reservation and be gracious to their neighbors, even when the world would demand retribution. Jesus Christ is the ultimate son of Abraham and the one to whom and through whom God's promises have been fulfilled and will be fulfilled. Anyone who is in Christ gets to inherit those promises, but they cannot be thoroughly enjoyed outside of that relationship. For anyone in this room who does not know Christ, we are glad you're here. But we want you to know, like Ishmael, you get to daily experience the blessings of God. But those promises that were made to Abraham and fulfilled through Isaac and Jacob and David and all the way through Jesus are not yours until you come to the Son of God to whom and through whom they're fulfilled. For those of us who know him, we need to look at what Abraham and Sarah did after that promise came true. They took the difficult step to remove from their life their backup plan. They needed, and they did, put their faith fully in the promises of God. Instead of relying on, are there any areas in your life that you've identified where you've thought about and God's revealed to you that you've fulfilled God's promises in your own way? Instead of relying on God's promise for provision, have you found yourself in a career where you've worked long hours and it's made you its slave? Or have you borrowed against your future in order to experience and live on and live the pleasures of today? Instead of pursuing a relationship with God first and waiting for him to fulfill his promises to you, have you made a relationship with someone that you know is not right? Or if instead of finding your glory in Christ, do you find your glory in work or at school or in sports or even by putting only your best foot forward on social media? I would encourage you to prayerfully ask God to reveal those things which are counterfeits to his promises. And I would encourage you to act like Abraham did and to cut those things out and throw them away immediately. Don't wait. Lastly, Abraham was firm yet generous with someone who was trying to take the land that God had promised him. Are we so confident in his promises that we can stand up to those, but in a way that invites a relationship, that invites generosity, that invites grace, rather than retribution like the world does? Jesus' kingdom will come. It will be realized in his time. Righteousness will win. And God has promised these things to his people. So why do we get so angry? And why do we get so afraid of these promises not being fulfilled? And why do we get so afraid when people of this world try to take and encroach on the promises that we know, and they seem to threaten Christian truth and Christian values? We can return these attempts at encroachment and manipulation and obstruction with generosity and love, because we know that God will fulfill his promises. God is calling each of us to trust him, to fulfill his promises in his time. It is our responsibility as we look toward our future homeland to obey him and live as if his promises will come true.